Welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob, Scott, and Becky review the Juan Gil Red Blend from Jumilla in Spain. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight, I am joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
Good evening, Rob.
Yeah.
How are you?
I am much, much better. I'm also joined by 45% of the Triple B. Oh, she's sitting there. She is conserving her energy because she understands tonight is a great wine of sorts. It's something that Scott's bought. Matter of fact, we're going to do two episodes tonight, not at the same time. Triple B will be released after, you know, a little bit here. But both wines are wines Scott bought, and you know what that always means. Interesting. This wine tonight is by Juan Gil from Spain, Jumilla specifically. Juan Gil. Yeah. He makes not that big of a line. His flagship wine is his Monastrell, and it costs $18.99. Scott paid a little more than what the going rate is, but he still paid $18.49 for this wine because they didn't round up.
I paid 49 cents too much.
Yes, you did. It is a blend of Cabernet, Monastrell, and Syrah. That's 45, 45, and 10%. It's on 12 months French and American oak. It's very exciting. This is a wine, though, you've been excited about. You bought this, and you said many great things. Did you try it before?
Always liked our products.
Oh.
Juan Gil.
You've had, yeah.
Barcelona, they carry it all the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they're reasonably priced. They might be, I'm sure they're in a line that costs more, but this is just, this line is in the is sub 20. Now, the Monastrell gets really good reviews from from the Parker.
We love Jumilla.
We do.
I love the concept of this blend, right? Monastrell and Cab from Spain. Why not?
Why not? Why not indeed? So, tonight we are going to try this wine. Simple, classic Wine Vault episode. One wine. No gimmicks. No shtick.
What?
No Wilford.
No shtick.
Because I think that might kill Becky. I don't want to do that. That's just too much for her. He is too much.
It is true. If you did it, I wouldn't even say goodnight. I would just go upstairs.
I'll do it at the very end of the episode. She'll know when to leave when I do Wilford. So I will not be baited into it. But Wilford will be the host of the second episode.
It's
so
also worth mentioning. It's yes. Daylight savings.
It is daylight savings time. Yes. Yeah, so it is, feels like it's an hour later than it is currently, which is exciting.
So we should be well rested.
This has been a long, long.
I didn't sleep well last night.
Well, that's because
Rob's personality was gone today.
I felt melancholy, yet angry, yet emotional, yet. I was just a bowl of emotions. I feel fine now, though.
Was he struggling?
Yeah, he had to go to Meijer for a while.
No, that wasn't. I just need to get
this.
Yes.
Those. So. You wouldn't have taken anybody with you.
No.
He left the house, went to Meijer, and I was able to corral our children into, like, cleaning the playroom, sweeping, all this stuff before Rob left. You were
Warpath. Was this one of those times where you said, Rob, don't you need to go to the Meijer to look for wine? Is it like that?
No. What, go to the Meijer and look for wine?
Well,
what wine am I going to look at for at Meijer?
Out of the
it's not been that long thing. When I went and bought a bunch of wine at Meijer for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, and that was the last of what they had.
No, but I had wanted to say for him to, like, take somebody with him, but it was fine.
Who would I have taken? I could have taken Maggie. She would have been the most enjoyable. I should have. Next time I will, I'll take Maggie. Margarete.
You never know. You might need Luke to run some interference for
Luke?
You.
Luke can go too.
Just they're all fine one-on-one.
That Henry. Kill that one.
Oh, butthole. He's a fine young
he's a bit overdone it this weekend, and he's colorful. Just say that. He has to be the loudest, most annoying thing in the room. And Bo's
they all are.
I don't know where he gets that from.
And Bo's in the room. But it was pretty quiet, though. But it was good, if that makes you feel better.
We did, like, put our deck furniture away and cleaned out our garage and, like, all that stuff.
And
it
barn.
Was a lot of work.
Got a lot done. Yeah. Yeah, I got a lot done. So, it was good. We got all that done. The house is ready for winter.
That's depressing.
What is?
I mean, it's good to be ready.
We didn't sit out on the deck more than, like, 30 seconds this damn summer.
I know.
It's ridiculous. So, folks, we're going to take a break. But we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault.
Hey, everybody. It's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back.
And we're back, folks. So, the 19 Juan Gil Red Blend, 45% Cabernet, 45% Monastrell, 10% Syrah. It does have a review, and it's from Robert Parker. And Robert provided it 90 of his points. No voices tonight, naturally, but that's okay. The 19 Juan Gil Red Blend was produced exclusively for the U.S. market. Bum, bum, bum. With 45% Monastrell, 45% Cabernet, and 10% Syrah, fermented and matured separately for 12 months. That's interesting. So basically, well, they could pull from the Monastrell and, you know, then mix it up. That's interesting. I've never seen that. It's ripe, or at least never mentioned. It's ripe at 15% alcohol, and the oak is still quite obvious, creamy and spicy. The palate is medium to full-bodied with abundant oak-related flavors and quite a lot of tannin, finishing dry and a little astringent. It has a very specific style. Okay. And it's best after 2022. And the tech sheet on, yes, made...
We didn't get there yet.
Made for the U.S. market, folks.
That's always not a good sign.
No.
It can be okay, though.
If it... No.
What's a friend that we like that's particularly made for the American market? Oh, Michael Chapoutier.
That's not necessarily.
Yes, that's made for the U.S. market.
The inaugural vintage of this was 2018.
Okay.
So, is there any animals in the label? No, but it has
three. It's a Rorschach.
Would you agree that that's a fairly pretty label, I think? Pretty label, everybody?
It looks like it's...
I think it's a Rorschach test.
It's a plant of some kind. A vine, maybe. Has everybody done their scores of integrity?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Scores.
I really am...
But in the glass, very deep crimson.
The nose, you know it's oaked.
It is. It is creamy oak.
Vanilla.
Little raspberry and cherry.
Something that's a little acidic on the nose as well.
Maybe those red berries, like we were talking about.
Maybe. Let's go in.
Well, the oak is pretty prominent, especially for a Spanish wine. Bright, creamy red fruits.
Tannins.
Yeah, it's tannic. And it is astringent on the finish. It has a nice spiciness from the oak that finishes out, but almost is like a vanilla-y kind of red fruit, like a creamsicle almost. Not sweet like that, but just kind of... It meshes like that. It's interesting.
You know it's Spanish.
I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah.
No. It's all Spanish all day for me.
The treatment of the oak is a little bit...
That's different.
Yeah.
What screams out Spanish to you?
Just the mouthfeel, the tannic backbone, the way, the length of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like Spain in a glass to me.
I mean, the flavor profile, it has a little bit of, a little tobacco cigar box in the mid-palate as it starts to wash over there. The flavor profile, I might agree, but it's just the oak treatment. It's from the American market, and they said, the Americans love the oak. So we will put the creamy oak on the vine. That's more French, isn't it, that accent? I don't have a Spanish accent that isn't offensive. I don't know. Antonio Banderas. Hello. I am Juan Gil. I make the wine for the Americans, and I still sound French, but
yeah,
still.
You're not.
They like the oak, so I'm putting the oak. Basically, the is Z. So you just, there you go. Is that right?
Terrible.
That's kind of.
You're terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible person, too.
It's a bright wine. Not overtly jazzy. Slightly Americanized, which I wish they would never do, because they don't need to. I would prefer this on neutral oak. French, Hungarian. Just to get a little bit of, the Americanized aspect out of it, because that's not what they normally use. But it's a bright wine. It's a well-proportioned, balanced wine, and I think people would like it.
It
tastes fresh. I always like something that tastes fresh.
Big tannic backbone.
It's got
tannin. Call it a tannin bomb, but it's a bigger tannic wine.
The astringency, I think, for me, is what's more...
Puzzling?
No. It says there's astringency. No. More prominent. Because, you can get astringency through Cabernets and Monastrell.
Sure.
But we normally see it more in Merlot, but...
15% alcohol content.
Yeah.
The Cab maybe not demonstrating as much astringency as you'd expect, so... I wonder what the alcohol content is in just the Monastrell component is, because something is given off a big astringent component, and I wouldn't expect that from the Spanish Cab.
No, well, it's the whole mix, but yeah, it doesn't taste of 15% either, which suggests that this wine will sneak up and stab you. It's the kind that you drink, enjoy, joy, smile, then you wake up at 6 in the morning and you realize you're still in your own dirty clothes and you were sitting upright on the couch.
Spilled the remnants of the wine on the floor.
I'm not saying that's ever happened to me. I'm just saying that this is the kind of wine that can do that to you.
This will do it to you.
It is surprising that they use French and American oaks. I don't know if we've had an American oaked anything not from the U.S.
I would concur. Not to say that there aren't wines like that, but especially Spanish,
especially anywhere.
Well, I haven't.
When's the last time you had an Italian wine oaked in with American oak?
I think we have, haven't we? I'm not saying it was good. I'm just saying that I think we have. It was Italian, actually. Not French, mind you. But there's probably somebody.
Tagnarelli's?
Who? Tagnarelli.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? I don't know. I just remember a memory of some kind. I want to say maybe, was that Pinot? I don't know. It was something that tasted like Syrah, but it wasn't supposed to be Syrah. I don't know why I think that. Probably, well, one thing, though, one reason why my memory might be a little dodgier is because we normally don't get a lot of good information on the Italian wines we drink. There's not a lot of facts and figures out there about them. So, and we don't do a tremendous amount of Italian wines on the show. So,
they come
because we can't pronounce the wines.
Well, we can't pronounce anything.
No, we can't do that, but, you know.
El Amigo.
El Amigo. Don't you know better than that?
El Amigo.
El Amigo.
I'm just going to be quiet. I never can pronounce that. Then again, we've drank all their wines.
But you also were like, we've done our research.
We did.
Typically, you don't pronounce it like that.
No, typically. I think we watched a video. You found, like you like to, and you found a video, and that's how somebody on there was pronouncing it. They're Argentinian, though, and they were probably drunk. So they're slurring all their words.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Then, as soon as they turned off the camera, he threw up all over himself, and we're like, oh, El Amigo. Okay. No, it's not.
Frothy little vomit spittle.
He's partially passed out. He's like, oh.
Just like us.
Yes, drooling. Oh, that's how you say it. Oh, okay. No. No, that's not how you say it. No. No. So.
What's your favorite part of this wine right now?
Well, it's kind of generic, but I like the freshness of it. You know, it has a little bit of vibrance on the bright cherry fruit. I'm not normally a lover of red fruit. To me, I think that's not all that exciting. It's not as heady as I'd like it. But in this wine, it works. You know, I love blue fruit, black fruits, dark, deep fruits, you know, cassis-dominated stuff. Plummy. That's what I like. But this one, it works as it is.
I like that little kiss of tobacco in the mid-palate.
Mm-hmm.
Just as you roll through to the finish.
That's super good.
Yeah.
That's super good.
Classic Monastrell.
But what I'll say, the fruits and everything doesn't have a great deal of... doesn't taste wildly concentrated.
No.
It has a little bit of a light bounce to it, so it's not so rich, so intense. But that's what you get in this price range.
And for me, that's why it sings of a Spanish blend. The fruit profile, you know, this is in California.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No.
I don't know. Well, it's just me.
That's true. It is just you.
I know I would never get to Spain based on the oaking alone. I know that I would never.
No, not if you're, because unless you sat here for 45 minutes drinking it like we do, if you just took your first drink,
would you know after 45 minutes?
Well, you'd probably find the bottle and look at it, but I mean, your first drink, you're not going to think that. I didn't.
Well, I knew it was Spanish, so maybe
that
helps my insight.
But no, also though, after a while, at least my palate gets a little desensitized to the oak and whatnot, and then you can kind of zero in a little bit. That's just me.
Like dial it in.
Hmm.
Yeah, kind of. Then again, I don't know though. I'm not guaranteed. I don't think it tastes Californian though.
No.
So then that would be this kind of quandary. But you also not knowing. I knew that it had American oak in there, so I'm already thinking that when I drink it. So does that have some bias too? Don't
sure, know. Absolutely.
Yep.
To me, the Syrah lends a lot of jazziness to it, and I think Syrah's just like a wild card sometimes when you're drinking it. Like, it just pulls in different flavors. It just kind of like adds this crazy element to it. I don't know, like the equivalent of like shaking up a 2-liter, I feel like, is what Syrah is to wine. And I think that I think I would pick Syrah as the main wine in it.
Because that, for me, the front tip in, right on the front palate, that little muddled cherry reminds me of Euro Syrah, well, at least Spanish Syrah. Mm. I get that, yeah.
That would be like, I mean, my only hope and prayer of getting it at all right. I think I would be able to, I can pick out the Syrah in it because it is just like a crazy wine.
I mean, it doesn't taste like a Washington Syrah or something like that. I mean, no. But European, well, especially Spanish and whatnot, not even Northern Rhone, that kind of stuff is different, but Spanish Syrahs taste a bit different than the way they come across in every place else, pretty much. I mean, there's some American Syrahs that, you know, well, aren't good. But
and the finish has like a definitive, to me, cherry line through it. And it isn't often that we have a wine that has a bright red fruit finish.
Yeah.
We get that a lot. I don't know. I don't even often see it on a mid palate, but it sings all the way through. Mm-hmm. That one J. Lore that you all have, that you love, J. Lore Hilltop, whatever year.
My love is rescinded on that one. I loved it back in the day, and then
you liked one of the vintages.
I liked two of the vintages, like okay. Back in like 2009 and 2011.
Well, and it was not.
This is like I've been drinking a long time, but
we had more than one kid.
Yeah, what do you mean, more than one kid?
2009?
Well, no, because we've had it, and I had bottles, but I had them aged for...
Cause we had one at that guy's restaurant that doesn't exist anymore.
Chef T's, yeah. That was still that generation. The ones with the gold and the black label, those were always good. It's just when they got into the... I mean, I don't know. They just switched it up, and it just went to shit. But I don't know what happened to them. But let's not worry about J. Lore. J. Lore shall never be spoke again in this vault.
Stricken, we like, bring it up all the time.
Stricken that name.
We like J. Lore Hilltop, and it's fallen off a little bit.
Fallen off a little bit.
I think the vintages we were getting that I recall were more like 15s and 16s.
I don't know. I remember the 11 and the 9 were good. They wouldn't be now, but I mean, they were then. So, I know. Well, anyway, folks, we're going to take a break. But then we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So on tonight's potpourri, we have excluded Becky because she is under the weather. But she did soldier through the drinking part.
She was thirsty.
She did her part. Yeah. She stood in like a stoic soldier. I'm just glad she's off the show, so now I can be on. Jesus Christ. I was sitting there like, my God, when she's so pissed off. And I just wanted to just release. Release. Hey, Scott, how you doing tonight?
Please release me.
How are you doing? You won't talk to me, huh?
Go. Not so much. I'm here on Becky's behest.
Oh, are you? Oh, okay, yes. That's great. Anyway, we have in the news. See, I'm trying to, like, educate. In the nude. I'm going to do the news in the nude. No. In the news, what is in the news? In the news is just me just telling you about an interesting wine story. Oh. Trying to do features here. No, in the news, big news, folks. Heights owner Galen Lawrence buys Bordeaux's Chateau Las Combes. Chateau Las Combes is a second growth Margaux, so the 1855 classification, which means we're winning. America's winning. No, Lawrence Wine Estates owns Height Cellars, Burgess Cellars, Ink Grade, and Stony Hill Vineyard, which probably is on the bottom shelf at grocery stores. But they just bought and that's pretty cool. A second growth Margaux. They didn't say how much it cost to buy it, but I think it's a lot. It's actually the largest estate in Margaux. 300 acres in Margaux and 24 acres in Haute Médoc. Annual production across the vineyard is about 20,000 cases. That's cool. So the Americans are winning, folks. And we love heights. So, you know, if they bring in any of their expertise to, you know, Bordeaux, which I'm sure they don't need expertise. But
yeah, I'm pretty sure Bordeaux's got the expertise.
Well, it's Bordeaux, not Bordeaux.
Bordeaux.
You're speaking like me. This is a southern man. You sound like me.
Regardless, I'm sure their expertise is fine.
I know.
Without the Americans meddling. They may have purchased. Doesn't mean they're going to tell them how to grow their wine.
Well, tonight's tonight's potpourri, we had actually alluded to this off air. And interestingly enough,
I'm sure the listeners heard it.
No, they didn't. What wines are out there that if they just cost a few dollars less, would you buy them? And we're talking like, you know, we were talking about Dow Vineyards, D-A-O-U. And it's like $26, $27. If it costs $19.99, we would buy it. But it's $7 just, too much.
Yeah,
it's like we just draw the line. It's like, no, thou shall not spend $27 on your wine. We won't do it.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned heights, and it's like there's some producers that are in that price range, maybe even a little more. It's just like Jordan. It's like
Jordan, yes. Why? Or Jordan.
Why? It's just, you're just a little too pricey.
Well, why wouldn't you buy Ferrari Carano? Jordan is an Alexander Valley Cabernet. Same thing with Silver Oak. Silver Oak is $80 to $90. Jordan, I think, is about 70s to 80.
70s.
But Ferrari Carano's Cabernet, the $30 one,
yeah,
is as good.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had Silver Oak. I've had Jordan. They're fine wines. They're Alexander Valley. You think I'd buy them?
They're really good. But
Well, you're not going to spend. They're silly money. Stone Street, though, is like 50 something. So, I mean, do Stone Street.
Yeah.
But I know there's people.
The Ferrari Carano. It's like,
yeah,
it's just there's so much quality in that label across all the different ones they make. They're just quality and for a really good price. And
what would you buy Silver Oak at?
It's not my thing.
But if you were going to buy it, what price would it have to be?
60, 50, 60.
I was going to say that.
Yeah.
If I saw it at 60, I would grab a bottle just because. Jordan.
Less?
Yeah. What about Jordan? Would you spend more for that?
Well, now that I'd spend a lot more money for, Rob.
Well, I just had this experience. It was Tolani. You know Tolani in Italy, right? They do the Vadocini and they do a couple other things.
Okay.
They had their legit Cabernet. It has a picture of a jazz singer on there. And it was like $38, $39, and it got 94 from Spectator, okay. Ageable to the mid 2030s, all that. But it was like, you know, it's a 13 vintage. And it's like, yeah, it's 30 something, you know, they dropped it down to $29.99, I bought two bottles.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's like, what's your price point?
Yes. At what point were you say, I buy that for a dollar. Well, that was my, yeah.
That was it.
They got me on that one.
That was it.
It's like, damn it. Yeah.
But there's a,
Well, I mean, we'll buy the shit out of Mount Veeder if it's under 40. If it's,
yeah.
What was it? Would we buy it at 28?
Yeah. Oh, we got some ridiculous prices on it. But like Mount Veeder, you know.
Not it is from Mount Veeder, but the winery, Mount Veeder Winery.
Yeah. In the 40s, right? I think it's regularly in the 40s. And it's worth it. It's just quality. You know, you can set it down for a while if you want to. But it's a ready now mainstream producer that maybe you're not going to drink Mount Veeder every night, but you know, I like to get a half dozen bottles of each vintage. Now it's on my list.
Well, Hall has their, what is it? Concur. And it's St. Helena. And normally it's like $70 some a bottle, but wine.com occasionally has it dropped down to 36.
Mm-hmm.
I have three or four bottles of that. Because it dropped down there. Rodney Strong Cemetery, normally 60. I have a place that doesn't know what they have, and they sold it at $12.99. I have seven bottles of that. Now they've just, oh, by the way, Scott, they just realized their mistake and it's been removed. The cemetery label is gone from the store. It's like, yeah. They're just like my Huckleberry. I've bought so many things that were... We bought several Martin Ray Cabernets, which Martin Ray Napa Cabernet is like 1989. Is it delicious? That's a strong word. It's drinkable, you know, but I bought it for 12, just like the Rodney Strong. So I sold Scott a bottle, and I had two. I just drank one on Friday because I got my sense of taste and smell back.
You're celebrating.
I didn't have as much mucus in my body. Now I have hardly any, which is lovely. And yeah, that was nice. On Friday night, I had a strip steak, and it was about 3/4 inch, but it was wide, nice, delicious. You know, it was from Kroger, actually. And it was discount meat, for God's sakes. And so I just did the Weber, right, and threw it on there. And then I had the Gorgonzola chive butter. Melted that on there. Man, then I just sliced it on the bias, and it was so fucking rich. I couldn't eat all of it. Bo had to help.
Poor Bo.
He had a rough life. He had some dog biscuits, and then he had that, and he was just living it. So I'm sitting in the chair, and I had a fire in the little what's that thing called?
Solo stove.
Solove. I was burning some things that were treated lumber, which you shouldn't burn, but just don't breathe that shit in. But anyway, I was cleaning up some scraps in around the barn, and I fell asleep in my chair.
Outside.
It was warm that night, but then it got a little chilly. It woke me up. It was like 10:45 when I woke up. And I fell asleep in the chair because I drank the whole bottle at that point. I fell asleep in the chair at 9:30. I slept peacefully. So then I went in, and I was just watching a YouTube video on the couch. Well, I passed out there, too. And Becky came in and threw a blanket over me when she got home at like 11:30. And I slept on that fucking couch till 6:30, man. That's just not a good way to sleep. I didn't even have a fucking pillow.
Well, you had a happy belly. It's all that matters.
Well, yeah. So I got up, took a shower, and then got in bed for a little bit.
Is that excess or laziness?
Which?
Just being... too lazy to get up off the couch to go to bed.
No, seriously. I kept having a dream where, like, oh, I need to take a piss. Oh, I need to take some ibuprofen. Oh, I need to have a glass of water. Oh, I need to go to bed. I need to take a shower. And I would do all those things in my fucking dream. Then I'd wake up. I'm still on the goddamn couch. And I would be so dejected. I'd just fall back to sleep. And then I would have the fucking dream again.
Yeah, that's laziness.
Finally, I just...
You were just going all in on not having any soccer activities this weekend.
No, we did. Henry had ODP. Oh. Becky is an administrator. Didn't you see her ODP sweatshirt?
I didn't notice.
Oh, yeah. Because she's an administrator. I have to be an administrator next weekend in place of her. She got nice stuff this year. It's all Nike. Mm-hmm. So it's like this Nike insulated sweatshirt. It's ridiculous. Huh. Yeah. And... then next weekend's ODP, and then Henry's a basketball tournament the weekend after that. So, yeah. And we had Henry's basketball or soccer season-ending party last night. So,
were the boys breaking out the bourbon bottles? Not the children, but the
no drinking
soccer. What?
No drinking there. No. Who? My friend Robert. I'm sorry, Robert. I had to name you. He had almost died on Halloween from alcohol poisoning, so he hadn't drank all week.
Halloween? He overdid it on Halloween?
Yeah, he did. And he was, and then my friend Jason, he overdid it to the point where he got some sort of I forget what company it was, but it was like pre-made mixer, so you could, it's like a Manhattan mixer.
Okay.
And he got...
there's some good ones out there.
He got horrendous acid reflux off something. And
probably corn syrup.
Probably. And so he stopped. He hadn't drank bourbon since. It's been like a week and a half or so. And he's just been drinking wine. And that household, wife's Andrea's favorite wine right now, is Numanthia Termes, the 17.
Why not?
Yeah. Well, we had the 18 recently. So
why not?
Yeah. So she's really into... Numanthia, which you should be. Maybe she wants to try Juan Gil.
She should.
It's nice.
I think everybody should try Juan Gil.
It's not Numanthia, but it's nice.
It's different.
Yeah. For the show, Scott, I have multiple wines coming.
Okay.
So you have to step up your game. One, this is a precursor for the future. One is a Killamoon Australian Cabernet.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a Porto blend from New Zealand.
No, I had that. I spent too much money on it.
Kayla.
God,
was it Kaitmandu?
Who fucking knows?
Keitanu?
K2.
K2U2.
You just listened to that episode. It was terrible. But
no, it wasn't terrible. It's just like, why? It's just
also, Juarez.
Script.
Who? Juarez.
Who?
Hmm?
Yeah, I know. It is their non-reserve Ruby Port. I'll tell you what it's called. I've never seen it before. Heard of it.
Hmm.
And of course, why not? We have white port too.
Where is non-reserve?
I don't know. I'll tell you in a second here.
Tawny?
No, it's Ruby.
Hmm.
Order status. So that's a lot of orders. Let's see what this is. Juarez Heritage Ruby.
Yeah, the Heritage.
I've never seen it before.
It's the regular. Yeah, it's Heritage. It's the regular.
Well, it's $1 cheaper than the Juarez Warrior. So, I've never seen that. You've never seen that either.
Yes, that's what they sell in the store.
No, I've never seen it in the store. Never seen it in the store.
False. It's the Juarez with the red label.
Then that's it. That's not it. You're wrong.
A Juarez Heritage Ruby Port. It's got the red label and the red.
Oh, Killacanoon Killerman's Run Cabernet Sauvignon, $17.99, right in our order. And the other one, which I won't share, is Penley Estate Tolmer Cabernet. Remember Tolmer? Cousin loves that.
Yeah,
he loves it more than the Phoenix.
Yeah,
yeah.
The Tolmer.
It's more expensive, but
well.
Now the Killamoon. Interestingly enough, when we get to that, it says drink now through 2039. Aussie drink by dates are crazy. Should be good. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to do it in
2039. It's a little cray cray.
Yeah, yes.
It's a little. I mean,
just a little cray cray.
Maybe you're a little full of yourself to think that wine can go to 2039.
That was the Spectator. Spectator said that.
Well,
you know. So what do they know?
They know what the advertising dollars tells them to say.
Any other wine? Oh, they don't have any. Any other wines that. I mean, there's so many things I can think of. I just can't bring myself to buy. They're not that much, but they just are that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing. I mean, I keep looking at Hitching Post Hometown Circle Syrah. It's like $25.99. I just can't buy it.
It's just a little much.
It is.
Hitching Post to Pinot? Yes.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they're Syrah.
Did we do a Merlot from them? Did we do a Merlot from
them?
No,
Gen Red is what it's called.
Gen Red Blend.
Look at the ball. And it had Gamay in it.
Yeah.
It was good. It was under 20.
Yeah. Oh. Sometimes I feel like Duckhorn's just, I wish it was a little less.
Problem with Duckhorn is, or something interesting.
And
I love Duckhorn, kind of, but I've had the Merlot a ton of times. And it's just
become meh for the price.
Well, it tastes like a Napa Valley floor, a wine. And that's to say that it doesn't have any uniqueness to it. And even the Cabernet, we like the Cabernet, and I have several bottles of the Cabernet. But do you get excited about it? You don't say, tonight I'm drinking a very, very special wine. And that's like $77 a bottle, but I bought it at $50.
Yeah. It's just not exciting anymore.
I'm not going to replace it with more Duckhorn.
How's there you sound? Go. That's the bottom line right there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a winery, though, that I know Scott and I both like is Ramey. We like that. We recently had the Syrah. We had some of the Cabernet. I have the Claret. It was a 17 Rémy Syrah. And Scott, we haven't talked about this. Well, we're gonna in our next episode. No, let's talk about it right now. We've got some time. Becky was quick. Recently, Scott and I and the superstar went to Louisville. Kind of a weekend of debauchery.
It sounded like debauchery, except we weren't that debauch.
We were debauchy.
We weren't that debauch.
Well, we're older now, but I mean, even by there's old, no strippers involved.
Even by old man standards, we weren't that debauchery.
We drank a lot. We ate a lot.
We really drank some and ate a lot.
We did. Well, that's a good thing. We drank as much as we could.
I felt we ate a lot. We were timid on the drinking to some degree.
I wasn't timid. It's just, I mean, it was $10,000 to drink.
Yeah, well.
But we were in Louisville. We had a wonderful time. And by the way, thank you, Superstar. Thank you, Cameron Mitchell's Restaurants. We were a guest of Old Forester, too, which we would like to give a shout out to Old Forester for being wonderful hosts and producing very, very lovely bourbon.
Yeah, they do a good job.
Yes, and they have a very, very lovely tour with very, very lovely people. We also stayed at the 21C in Louisville. And by the way, exceptionally lovely people. Proof on Main.
Yeah, the restaurant.
The restaurant's Proof, and then the bar is Proof on Main. Folks, if you're in Louisville, you need to go to Proof, and you need to go into Proof on Main. Just say hello for us.
Yep.
That turned into like our... You remember
the
Home like
Away
a,
from Home?
Like a 1950s movie where there's like, oh, so-and-so's in the back. You know, it's, oh, that's where he always hangs out in the back. That was us at that bar. It was a very nice bar. It was swanky.
Not just a bar, but restaurant. I mean,
yeah.
Breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Oh, we had breakfast there.
Yeah.
Oh, God. For breakfast, one morning, I had slightly warm pimento cheese with just toast points. It was just like a toast. It was magnificent. And you had, what'd you have?
I just remember the coffee.
It was like a hash, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a hashed thing. Yeah, no. Yeah. What was the meat and hash, though? Was it brisket?
I think so.
No, short rib. It was short rib hash.
Mm. And Steve, what did he have?
And Sunday, I didn't have breakfast.
Well, you were fucked up.
No.
We'll get to that. And then we had grilled octopus, which we absolutely loved, and then Scott drank the barrel strength Old Forester, which was just too manly for his pansy ass. But
it's too strong.
It was very. It was jet fuel, but
it was 120.
That was the first. Scott sits down. His first bourbon he's going to drink. First drink he's going to drink. Well, no, we had Bloody Marys earlier, but he goes, "I'll have the barrel strength."
Oh no. Let the bartender make a suggestion, and I went with it. And
they pour it over the big cube, folks, and the big cube just sizzles.
Yeah, just vaporize.
It's like, I'm sorry, we need a lead-lined glass for this one. Yeah.
But it's, in a way, it caused me to draw caution for the trip, so I didn't over-imbibe. It was a good way to start.
It was a good bourbon.
It really is.
I drank the Pinhook, which I love Pinhook. And Steve and I had Smoke Wagon.
Yeah.
It was good. It was different, peaty. I know we don't ever talk bourbons, but we love bourbon here on the show.
Peaty should be scotch.
I agree, but, you know, Scott, it's a change, and it's also from Nevada, so.
Yeah. And so I guess I'm the only purist of the group. You boys will drink stuff that's not from Kentucky.
Bourbon is required to be within the 50 United States. Well, no, the continental United States. I don't know if Hawaii counts. So bourbon can be made in California. Bourbon, nope. It can.
That's fine. You do you.
By the way,
I'll drink bourbon that's from Kentucky, sir.
Peerless. Peerless rye, Peerless regular. Costs about $100 a bottle. Should cost $35 a bottle. Don't buy a Peerless. Would you agree? You hated it.
I didn't hate it. It's just...
It's not good.
There's all these bourbons that are three figures, you know, $100, $90, $80, mm-hmm. And it's just like...
Some of them...
I don't get it.
Some of them warrant it, but many of them don't.
Many don't.
No, and that one, Peerless does not. No.
Was it Peerless that you had for $14 a pour, and then we down the street, and it was 40?
10.
And it was 40?
We had 10, it was 48 down the... Yes, we were... What was that? The
Doc Crow's.
Well, yes, but it was the Whiskey Kitchen.
What did we have at Whiskey Kitchen that was so good? The chicken was so good.
Well, the Whiskey Kitchen, they have reasonable pours. So Peerless, which is $100 a bottle, is 10. Eagle Rare, which you can't find, is 6 or 8. I mean, it's cheap.
It was dumb.
It's what it costs. It's not, there's no markup. You go across the street to like Doc Crow's, which is another bar. It's $48 for the same glass of bourbon.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, economically not the same.
Incredible selection. It's more of a touristy place.
It's
a tourist trap,
yeah.
But it's, you know, they've got
But the Whiskey Kitchen. Whiskey Kitchen should selection. Be too.
Hey, Proof on Main had an amazing selection.
And they didn't gouge you.
150, I think they said they had. Something like that.
And their mixed drinks, which I'm not often to indulge in.
We had such a great time.
I did.
We had such a great time.
I know. But.
It's an Art Deco style modern hotel room, but their shtick is they have a museum.
And Saturday morning when we were.
It's a really cool museum, too.
We walked around drinking coffee, looking at art. Now.
Chicago, Cincinnati, Arkansas.
What?
St. Louis.
Well, 21C.
Yeah. Seems like somewhere out east. Maybe Pittsburgh.
But the thing.
A wonderful place to stay.
But, yes, that's very nice. However, the staff and the people, that's what made it for us.
Yeah.
We did feel like home. So you go down, you're sitting down at the bar to order breakfast. It's like you're at your mother's that costs a lot of money. But you're, wow. You know, you're going to.
There's that.
Yeah, there's that. We didn't care. Steve made $100 by hugging a man. That's not a joke. He actually did. Now, there is another restaurant that we went to. Vincenzo's. We went to an Italian restaurant on Saturday night called Vincenzo's. And this was a Louisville staple. And let's just say Vincenzo's was the worst food, like things that you would eat.
Or, well, that you're using that term loosely.
Yes, that things all that three of us had ever had. When you walk into Vincenzo's, they like to use, what are those things called? Chafing dishes?
Yes.
Well, it smells like cup of soup and butane gas. Very strong when you walk in because they have like chafing dish stations. And there's like two or three of them. And they can roll them over to your table, right? Well, they don't turn the gas off all the way. And they also don't clean very well in there. And
it was clean. The place was clean.
No, it was not.
The place was clean.
Well, so anyway, you have a nice whiff of butane gas and cup of soup. And so what they're doing at Vincenzo's is they're not like, oh, tableside preparation. Like, oh, do they cook the sole right now? No, they don't. What they do is they make the food on Tuesday, and now it's Saturday. But it's been frozen from Tuesday to Saturday. And what they do is they reheat the food in the chafing dishes tableside. So if that is your thing, you know, what is it, Bertolli? You get that frozen bag of pasta? Oh. First of all, Bertolli tastes a lot better. It does. And it also doesn't cost $60. Steve and I, the superstar, I'm sorry, you don't know what his name is. We got tornadoes of filet.
Allegedly.
And then some other assorted vegetables. Well, our filet was literally a quarter inch thick. And normally tornadoes are like a 4 ounce filet, right? But it's thick. It's normal, but it's a smaller and they have multiples, right? No. This was a cutlet, a filet cutlet.
Two cutlets.
And then they warmed them up in the chafing dishes, and it was in a sauce. Or no. It was in a brown liquid that had no flavor other than beef bouillon. Not the good beef bouillon. The little fucking egg cube thing. You know, that's dried out. It tasted like beef bouillon over round steak.
It was
Salisbury steak.
No, Salisbury steak tastes good. This did not. And then they had like a little, what's the potato? You take like a little red potato and you put like the squirrely shit on the top or you pipe it on top, right? And they had done that. But they did it 3 weeks before.
Yeah, it was crusty.
It was crusty and it fell. You just push it with your fork and it fell over because it was frozen. And then they had vegetables on the plate that all were raw. Which means, A, they probably weren't frozen.
I thought the veggies was mine, and you guys didn't get the veggies.
We had veggies.
I thought you had just the potatoes.
We had veggies.
With your tornados.
We had veggies, man.
So it's like, and the veggies came out, there was like carrot sliced in half, asparagus sliced in half, and then it was wrapped with thin skin of green pepper. So it was like...
There were raw peppers on there.
So it's just like this
artistic
presentation of... veggies in a bundle.
You know, folks, how you... Well, yours was. You know how you get... You know how you get those sweet
veggies.
Peppers in the plastic bag at your grocery store? And then, you know, it's like green. It's all the waxy ones. Well, they had those, too. That's it. They didn't cook them. It just had raw peppers on your fucking plate. It wasn't in a pasta. It was your dinner. Then Scott had halibut. Now, Scott had...
the halibut was executed well.
Yes, they had rice-a-roni.
It was orzo.
Okay, they had orzo rice-a-roni.
And that was done fine.
Scott,
but
it looked like
the
shit.
Weird sauce on the side.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, it's supposed to be served with shrimp. But, you know, usually when you get shrimp served with your seafood dish, you think, oh, I'm going to get some shrimp. No, it was served with a piece of shrimp.
Yeah, and it was more of a dog toy than shrimp, wasn't
it? It was the worst piece of shrimp I've had in my life. Usually when shrimp's overcooked, it's rubbery. This was hard.
But it had been cooked on Monday.
This was hard.
And served on Saturday.
Perfect for a commercial for the little blue pill. The shrimp was hard.
Well, this is the thing. Steve and I sent our food back, right? Scott paid for his. But Steve and I's round steak in a beef bouillon sauce was $60 a plate. Scott paid for his. His was $60.
We split the bill three ways, we all paid.
Yeah, folks. Even though they took $120 off the bill, now we did get 2017 Ramy Syrah. That was $80, right?
Yeah.
And that was, by the way, the best thing that didn't belong. We should have rescued. We should have gone into whatever cellar they had. And I don't consider it stealing. I consider it rescuing, taking everything out of there that was good and taking it with us because we know what to do better with it. Mm. But our bill was still over $250 with $120 off it.
Well, we had three expensive appetizers that weren't as bad as your entrees, but they weren't great either.
No, they were terrible. They had
terrible.
They said they had crepes, and it was this. It was a mound of tomato sauce.
Well,
and you know what the best thing I like, though? The bathrooms. The men's bathroom had an M, in a wooden M on it, but part of the M was broken off and missing. How the fuck does that happen?
Yeah, it was so...
Did somebody get so hungry they ate part of the M?
So it was like this... Is that an N? What is that?
I mean, somebody... How do you break off part of...
Is it Cyrillic? Has the triple B been here?
It was like the M that you would buy at... Like Hobby Lobby, you know? I mean, it was... Where did it go, man? Yeah. And buy a new fucking M. And the door didn't work either. All we're saying is, though, Vincenzo's in Louisville.
Go fuck yourself.
Go the fuck yourself.
It was
no, seriously.
But
I mean, if you own a restaurant and you have no sense of pride, and quite frankly, our waiter, he was a nice guy, but... He probably was at the methadone clinic most of the damn goddamn time. I'm sorry. That fucker was not clean.
Remember when we got there, who wanted to leave right away and go to the...
You did, I know. And they had this asshole waiter that would go around and sing for tips. I don't know why. He was singing a fucking hymn behind us.
It
was the dumbest ass experience. You know, you watch Gordon Ramsay's like Kitchen Nightmare and you don't think that exists in real life. And then you go experience it for real. And it's not a joke. They're being fucking serious. You're like, wow, this is just like awesome. But it's not.
I think, what's the bar rescue guy? They needed him. They really needed him.
No, they need a fire. That's what they need. A fucking fire.
And the tableside stations that you're supposed to cook at. They were taking the china and putting that on the direct propane flames.
Which is probably...
So they weren't even heating...
They were burning the plates.
The appetizers up in a proper saute pan. They were plating it and heating the plate.
The bottom.
Oh, be careful. That's hot because we just put it on our propane burner on our... Oh, really? That's hot. I hadn't noticed that.
At every plate, this cheap-ass fucking plastic gold plate that wasn't even used at all. God. It just was sitting there. They didn't put anything on it because all the other plates were a different shape. They were all square. So this piece of shit, flimsy motherfucking frisbee-looking thing, they took it. I mean, it's like everything you could fuck up was just, God.
But they were real nice about it. You know, they brought us those wonderful desserts.
Oh, my God. Free. And they felt bad, so they brought us desserts. The desserts were made on Tuesday. And we're like, how were they? And they were so excited. And the trip, and the super show's like, yeah, they're not very good. It was like, this is, no, it's not any good.
Tiramisu that looked like a big piece of carrot cake.
And then this cheesecake with the most rancid, acrid, raspberry-esque sauce on it.
And folks,
you know when they pipe whipped cream on something and it's been there for a long time? You can tell, right? Because it's a crust on the outside. Well, guess what? You're going to turn this shit upside down. It ain't going to go anywhere.
Not just the crust on the outside, but when you broke through it like a piece of creme brulee,
there
had been fermentation taking on inside.
It's a goddamn creme brulee. It's fucking whipped cream, man.
What's that? You can get a buzz off the whipped cream.
Scott was salty. So, folks.
Well, sometimes I'm right and you guys don't listen, and this is one of those episodes.
That's true. Well, folks, we're going to take a break, but we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So the Juan Gill 19 Red Blend, which is very specific. We're going to go around the room. We're going to go to Becky first.
Hi.
Hello.
It's Becky.
And I'm Becky's alter ego.
Yes. Hi. I'm sleepy tonight and grumpy. I got a headache.
Rob pisses me off all the time.
See, Scott's being more offensive. People like Becky, so I can't really like rag on her. They'll get pissed at me.
Nevertheless, I gave it 87 of my points, which is really actually a fair score. I don't want to reveal that, but it is a good, actually, I think it's accurate. But anyway, I said it's got tannin, cherry, finish is interesting, don't appreciate it's made for Americans, and in parentheses, eye roll. And then she said, Das Vidanya, what? 100 years Reich. That's Nazi Germany. I don't know.
What about Kirsten?
False flag and then tactical nuke. I don't know. It's not hilarious.
87 of Comrade Becky's points.
Scores of integrity. I had her at 87.
So did I. I'm just going to be honest. I did too. That's a really, we're right on it. Scott,
that's where I'm at as well. I would, you know, I want it to be higher, but I just, That's where I'm at. I'm going to have an 87 also. I like it. I recommend it. I think it's a good wine. There's just something that it maybe it needs to sit down for a little while.
I don't think so.
I just think that the oak and the tannins could mature a little and settle back a year, 18 months, 2 years.
Yeah,
the
but it's still going to be that. I mean,
I don't know. I think it's settled down. But 87, I like it. I think it's a really well-balanced wine. I would like to see if the tannin and the oaking could calm down a little bit. Love the astringency. It just seems like it could use something to take it to that next level.
Well, it could use a completely... I'm also at an 87, mind you.
It's been a long time since we've all had three at the same scores.
I mean, I was, you know... 87, 89, but it's an 87, but it's not an 89, so it's more of an 86, 88. The main hang-up I have is you can only achieve so much with red fruit, in my opinion. I think that you could make a wine that was bright and beautiful and maybe achieve something, but not with these varietals. Red fruit belongs with Pinot. It belongs with other varietals, not with this one. The lineup of these grapes, right, Cab, Monastrell, Syrah, should be deeper, should be more broody. It shouldn't be so obvious and upfront. It should have a broodiness quality. It's not even the right color, in my opinion. It should be more purpley. I mean, it should be something that is a barn burner, brick house, rich, dense wine. And it's not.
Yeah, I think it's the Spanish cab that's not to say holding this back, but that does the things you're talking about there.
I like what it is, but you know what? If I didn't know what the makeup of it was, I probably would like it more. I wouldn't score it much different, but I wouldn't have a set against it. Because I would say if somebody asked me, there's Tempranillo in there, is what I would say.
Okay.
Because it has that Tempranillo-esque quality to it. I would probably say Syrah, too. I'm not getting the Monastrell or Cabernet.
Yeah, no, the Monastrell, you're getting the tobacco, the
well, blackberry. That is Monastrell. You're right. But there's no blackberry. There's no blackberry. It's red fruit. There is a little bit of tobacco, but... It's just, it's a little bit too friendly up front. And... A little bit too much tang, a little bit too much, that just holds it back from being a really serious wine.
I think, okay, I don't mind that up front. It's just that
way
the oak is treated with this, it just needs to calm down a little bit. And that's the American oak for sure.
Yeah, but I just don't.
And it's fine.
But Scott,
it's not a flaw. It needs to calm down a little bit.
For me, it's the flavor profile.
Mm.
So if it were dark fruits that came across, I think that oaking would be more appropriate. It's the red fruits, the bright, you know, freshness of it paired with that oak isn't necessarily a match made in heaven. Mm. Okay. These kind of fruits really are best on concrete or even stainless, where... It's very, very neutral, or even at least just a minimalist French oak.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The wine, don't get me wrong, folks. This wine does not taste bad. The decanter is dry. But it could be better. So.
I like Wormheel. This is a good offering. It's not their best offering.
No. And also,
I would, if you are going to give Wormheel a try, and this one in particular, set it back a little while.
I wouldn't. You know why?
Yeah, I would.
Folks,
this is the soak.
This is the problem I have with this. It would be good at $12.99. It's not at $18 or $19. Hmm. That is a little bit higher than where it should be for what they're putting out right here.
I don't have a problem with it.
I think it, no, Scott, I think it would be a really great wine at $12.99 or $13.
Oh, you're talking the QPR.
No. I'm talking about flavor profile. I'm talking about the wine that they produced. I'm not talking about the relative value. I mean, it's not a bad value where it is. I'm just talking about what they have produced. Mm-hmm. First of all, is the lesser of their wines. They obviously emphasize the Monastrell more. And I think this wine belongs more down to towards the lower teens. Especially also when you have a mixed mash blend.
Yeah.
And American market, you know what? You shouldn't be.
I wish I didn't know that it was marketed for dumb Americans.
They shouldn't be, because have you seen it anywhere? You saw it there at the Village Wines, right. But you didn't see it anyplace else. So it's not doing too well. Just to point out this to Juan Gill, Americans know wine. And we probably know it better than you do.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Well,
why don't you say that as a Southern man?
Southern man be a little more offensive.
That's pretty offensive in itself.
Well, the wine guy, he's been to Spain. Scott, you have not been to Spain.
No, yeah. I haven't been to Spain.
And the wine guy was not overly impressed with, he likes Spain, mind you. But if your bars are full at noon through 4 o'clock on a Tuesday.
It's a great place to be.
Well, he's not a, you know, whatever. And you can't get anything to eat until 10 p.m. I'm just saying. You got some.
Go to the deli and get some jamon ham.
You better hope Portugal doesn't get frisky, is all he's saying. All I'm saying, yeah, the French, they'll just give up. But, you know, those Portuguese, man, they'll get you.
They'll get frisky.
Yeah, that's right.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. I don't know either. When I get frisky, Scott, you know what happens?
Please get involved.
Normally, no. Well, yes. I mean, taser. I think that's foreplay, though.
Yeah, but you do.
I tell them that, and then they use lethal force. Luckily, I'm around a lot of drunk cops, so they don't shoot for the heart.
Oh, Lord. They
yes.
Don't shoot for the heart?
Wow. There's a lot of blood pumping through my dick, if that's what you mean.
Stop mentioning your ROTC. Cooker.
I could put their eye out from 15 feet away with that son of a bitch. Yeah, it's great.
Jesus.
No, I have a small dick. Anyway, folks, for Rob the Wine Guy, Scott the Licensed Taxi Driver, and previously the Triple B, we're going to bid you adieu, but see you next time here on the Wine Vault. Good night.